Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in abject poverty in Puerto Rico. Overcoming huge odds, he became a professional golfer. Pound for pound, he was the longest hitter in golf history while winning 30 tournaments. Elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1992, his contributions as an entertainer and humanitarian are even greater. Known for his famous sword dance, his name, Juan Rodriguez. Known throughout the world simply as Chi-Chi. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the incomparable Juan Chi-Chi Rodriguez. Juan Chi-Chi, welcome. What an honor to have you.
Jack, nice to hear from you. And I want to know if you were related to Larry Pezzullo.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, he was the president of the PGA for about 10 years. Oh. He was a wonderful man.
So, no, sir, not. Can we start, Chi-Chi, by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, you know, I was brought up in the slums in Puerto Rico. We never had no running water. We didn't have any sanitary places. We had to do what they call a latrine, a hole in the ground, and we had to go and get the water someplace in cans and carry the water on our heads. But you know what? People that are born poor like I was, they appreciate things better. As a kid, when I was 7 years old, I used to work in the sugarcane plantations. And I was the water boy. I gave water to drink to the guys that cut the sugarcane. Then one day my brother and I built a little four-wheel cart. We were going down the highway. You know, Puerto Rico didn't have many cars then. And then there was this hill, and we went down on the cart on the hill, and the people were playing golf. So playing golf didn't interest me. It was, you know, I figured if I were carrying one of those golf bags, it would be much easier than to be in the sugarcane. Because, you know, they leave for the sugarcane. They'll cut you up like a knife, you know, when you walk through it. Then I went to the caddy master. My brother left. My brother was not interested in doing anything with golf. My brother was kind of a genius, you know, school man. He became a lawyer later on and never lost a case. Anyway, the caddy master told me I was too small, and I said, "Well, please, sir, you know, I might be small in stature, but I'm big in heart. I can do. I've been working in the sugar company. That's too hard of a job, you know." So he says, "Okay, I'm going to send you as an apprentice four caddy." So he sent me with a four caddy, and that day I made 10 cents for 18 holes. And then at the age of nine, there was this man named Mr. Teal, T-E-A-L-E, and he came to play, and there were no caddies in the caddy pen, so I was the only game in town. So he came to me. He says, "Son, you think you can carry this bag?" I said, "Yes, sir. I've been waiting for this day for 2 years." And he says, "If you get tired, I will help you." And I said, "Well, sir, I will not get tired." He says, "Okay, let's go." So I carried the 18 holes, and he came to the caddy master, and he says, "You know, this young man is the best caddy that I've ever had in my life, and I'd like for him to be my caddy from now on. Every time I play, I want him to be my caddy, and when my kids play, I want him to be their caddy too, so he can get a job all the time." So he moved me from a Class C, which was not a caddy, it was a four caddy, to a Class A caddy. I mean, that's incredible. And then I... I started making, I think it was 25 cents for 18 holes with the bag, you know. And then one day, when I was about 12 years old, we were still making 25, maybe 35 cents for 18 holes. And most of the caddies were adults. I went with them one time, and I said to them, you know, 35 cents for 18 holes is not enough money. So one guy, you know, he said to me, he said, sit down. Boy, and another guy said, now, wait a moment. Gigi's a smart little kid. You know, let's hear what he has to say. I said, here's what we do. We ask him for 50 cents. And if they don't give it to us, we go on strike. So now this is 65 years ago. So we went to the president of the club and asked him to raise us to 50 cents. And he said no. So I told him, I said, the men have said no. So Saturday, all of us, when they come, the members normally play on Saturdays. I told him, I said, we will strike. And we will bring broomsticks. If anybody breaks the strike, we'll beat him up with the broomsticks. So one guy broke the strike, and of course he got beat up. He didn't get beat up that bad, but he got beat up with, you know. And after they carried their bags for about three or four holes, they called us in and they gave us the 50 cents. So 6 months later, I said, 50 cents ain't enough. We're going to go for 75. So, you know, Jimmy Hoffa wasn't the first guy to form a union. Maybe I was. Uh-huh. So anyway, they didn't give us the 75 cents, so we had another strike. Anyway, we had about three strikes, and when I left to go in the United States Army, which I was 19 years old, 7 years later, we were getting $1.70 for 18 holes. Now, those days were pretty bad because it used to be that if you lose a ball, they used to look for them four legs, you know, but they put hands up and down. Because, you know, in the Depression days, there was no golf balls and no tees. So anyway, they used to kick in the butt and fire you. And I said, that stuff has got to stop, you know. And we got all that stopped. The golf tee, you know, Byron Nelson laughed like hell when I told him this, because he asked me one time, he says, you know, you'd be a better player if you could learn how to tee up the ball low. Because I always tee up the ball very high. As a matter of fact, the USGA made my tees illegal. You know, they have made everything illegal, but those long putters, they should be made illegal. But anyway, I used to live in a stable, you know, and we had horses and cows, and not we didn't own them, you know, we just worked there, my father. And there were no tees, you couldn't find a tee, so we used to make a tee out of sand and water, and you wet the sand and you bring it out and you put it down and you roll it and then that's what you use for a tee. Well, if you gamble with the kids in front of you, they would throw the water and the sand away. Now you didn't have anything to tee up the ball on. So I used to take dry horse manure, and that's where I teed off the ball. And if you notice, when I swing the club, I never keep my head down, because if you hit it fat, that stuff would come back at your face. So that's why I move away from the ball. When I swing, you can see that I always move my head out of the way. Anyway, I play pretty good with that. And then the way I started golf is I used to make a golf club out of a guava tree. I take a guava limb and I cut it up and make it like a putter, and then I take a pipe out and I put it through it. I put a nail at the end. Then I take a tin can, and I take a lead ball and a hammer, and I hammer that can around that ball. And, you know, I dig two holes in the baseball park, one in second base and one in home plate, and I go and practice there all by myself. So I was thinking of becoming a criminal lawyer, and And there went my criminal lawyer, the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Because I would have been a lawyer, and I probably wouldn't have made no money.
And you'd still be using the guava trees as the sticks.
Yeah. Now I use the guava tree to hit the lawyers on the head.
We're talking to Juan Chichi Rodriguez, who at 5'7 and 130 pounds was the longest hitter, pound per pound, in golf history. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Juan Chichi Rodriguez. Chichi, you turned pro in 1960. Here in Michigan at the Buick Open, you won $465. Talk about the money you guys played for versus the money today.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. I was never an amateur. I was always a pro. I made a living at golf since I was a kid. But anyway, I became a tour pro at the age of 60. I mean, in 1960, and I never forget that I went over there to Flint, Michigan, and I met a couple of good families there. Anyway, they had me give a speech at the Rotary Club, and they gave me $500. I thought I was the richest guy on earth. Now, I met a guy named Mr. Titus there who lived at the club. And he invited me to stay with him and his wife at his house, and I stayed at their house. And $500. And in the speech, they asked me who was going to win. I said, well, who else is playing? They say, Sam Fneed. I say, Sam who? Well, Sam Fneed and I became pretty good friends later on. I think he was the best player that I've ever played with. Anyway, I shot 77 the first day, I never forget. And guess what? I was tied for the lead playing the last nine holes, and I believe I shot 42. I three-putted like four times and finished 16th and made $465. I thought I was the richest man alive. And then I always liked Flint. Flint will always have a good spot in my heart. I was just at Oakland Hills the other day, and I went and did a corporate outing there for them. You know, we raised a lot of money for education, for scholarships. But anyway, from there I went to Baltimore. In Baltimore, we played a golf course called Pine Ridge, and I shot 67, 67, 76, 67, and I finished fourth. Now I made $1,400. I thought I was the richest guy in the world. So I say, hell, I'm going to go vacation to Puerto Rico. And I came back, you know. I don't know what I did after that. But anyway, it was a great great start for me. And I came to Dorado. You know what was so good about this is that once I've had those two finishes, I didn't have any sponsors, you know. And one time, Lawrence Rockefeller used to own the golf course where I work as an assistant pro. And I asked him to help me out, you know, and he said, how much you need? I said, well, I need $15,000 a year to cover the tour for a year. He said, well, you get $15,000. If that's not enough, just ask me for more, because I will give you whatever you need. I want you to go first class and represent Dorado in a good manner, which I feel like I always did. I try very hard to represent Dorado. And right now, I'm the Ritz-Carlton is building here, the first six-star hotel in the world. And I'm involved with this project right here at Dorado. Dorado will always have a place in my heart. But anyway, I remember what happened here is I was practicing one time when I was just out of the Army, and I was working in a psychiatrist clinic. So I that was the best job I've ever had, because I used to feed and bathe the guys that came from the Korean War that were mentally ill. And I was making $20 a week, $80 a month. And I became the assistant pro at Dorado Beach, and one day I was practicing nothing but 2 irons. I hit 2 irons for about maybe 4 hours in a row. Bam, 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 bam. And there was this, the first pro at Dorado was a guy named Ed Dudley. And Mr. Dudley came down with this other older guy, and he says to me, he says, Chi-Chi, I want you to meet Mr. Roberts. I said, hello, Mr. Roberts, how are you? And he says, young man, he says, I like your work ethics. I've been watching you from up there from the pro shop, and I like your work ethics. And he says, how would you like to play the Masters? And I said, wow, sir, I have never won anything. You know, I was the post champion in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and the club champion, but I never won anything. He says, you are wrong. He says, you're the Puerto Rico Open champion. So he invited me to the Masters. When I first got that invitation, I thought I was the biggest guy on earth, you know. I was showing everybody, look at here, I'm going to Augusta to play the Masters. And sure enough, when I got to the Masters, I'm on the first tee, and they say, from Puerto Rico and Dorado Beach, Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rico Open champion, Chi-Chi Rodriguez, man. I thought I was in heaven. And I tell you, I played the Masters about 11 years, and that was the most exciting tournament. And the most exciting thing that happened to me there was that I met Bobby Jones. I met Mr. Jones, and he was too bad that he was, you know, through with not only with his game, but, you know, he couldn't. He was in a wheelchair, and I don't think that a man that did so much for golf and that knew that much about the game should have never ended up like he did. But, you know, that stuff happens.
America had its Rocky, Notre Dame had its Rudy, and golf and the world has its Chi-Chi. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Juan Chi-Chi Rodriguez. You won 8 times on the regular tour and then 22 times on the Champions Tour. Chi-Chi, I had the honor of playing with you in the GTE Suncoast Classic, I believe in 97, outside Tampa. My dad was the caddy that day. And I've often said that every human being should have that honor to play with Chi-Chi because of how you treated the kids all day. You treated them like royalty. Well, your love for kids. Why so much love for the kids?
Well, if you take my story, you know, I was never a kid. I mean, I worked since I was 7 years old. And the kids are the future of the world. And I tell you what, you have to give them the vehicle to make it in life. You know, we can help the kids, and they can become our executives and our doctors and lawyers and, you know, or you don't help them, and they can become your felons. They can be the one that'll rob your house or even kill you. They can become the criminal. So behind the success or the failure of a kid, there's always an adult. You know, with my foundation over there in Florida, and we have the only foundation in the United States that the books are open for anybody, and we don't get federal help because, you know, the first thing that my kids do in the morning is they pledge allegiance to the flag. So if you get federal money, you can't do that. So they learn respect, because when you respect the flag, and I mean the flag of any country should be respected, they can learn how to respect themselves. And we do 120 kids a day. We have the curriculum for them, and they also work at the golf course. And you know, they learn agronomy, they learn business, they learn manners, they learn how to fix machines. They do anything, and we pay them when they work. You know, give them self-esteem. And I'm fortunate to say that my school is number one school in Florida. That the governor just gave me a medal. And it was a beautiful day because a general, two-star general, awarded me the award. But those kids, we have a 99% success. My kids graduate from college when they go there. And you know what's so interesting about it? So interesting is that the kids a lot of them have problem, bad problems. And when they get to my foundation, they change completely around. You know, they graduate, they study, and they don't want to leave. Because, see, I used to hate school as a kid. And when I became an adult, I was driving in Greensboro one time to the golf tournament, and there was a school. And I stopped by to look at the school to see why I hated school when I was a young man. And then I kept looking. I kept looking. My God, then I made the conclusion. That's a prison. It's a prison. Look at it. You got a big fence around it. And it has the design of a school. It's a prison. So we decided to design my school like a home. And we have no fences. We have no detectors. We had never had an argument. We had never had a fight. And the kids just feel at home when they're at my foundation.
We're talking to Juan Chichi Rodriguez, who often says that John Daly's drives go farther than Chichi went when he goes on vacation. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Okay, Cheech.
Yeah, Jack, I told John Daly that someday we're going to play the senior tour together, if he lasts that long.
And I'd put my money on you.
Yeah, yeah.
Golf Magazine, in 1980, May of 80, wrote an article about you, and in that article it said, in circuit golf, there's only a handful of mountain climbers. Lee Trevino, because of his well-publicized poverty as a youth. Ben Hogan, because of his lack of innate ability. Lee Elder, because of his race. And Gary Player, because of his physical limitations. And then there is Juan Chichi Rodriguez, because he overcame all of these four mountains. Chichi, how did you do it?
Well, you know, I always bring strong-minded. It happened. I got the genes of my father. My father was a man that never made over $18 a week, you know. And how in the world did we, six kids, how in the world did we ever make it in life? You know, I had a disease called rickets, and I had tropical sprue, and how in the world did I live through that? I'll never know. But my father had something that that other parents don't have. My father had the time for us. He used to go and work, and I mean he worked 16, 18 hours a day, 6-7 days a week, and never made over $18 a week. And then after 30 years, he worked for the same man, and he had a heart attack, and he fired him, you know. That's why I believe in unions, you know. I think that was so unfair, you know. And anyway, my father was rich in a way because when he used to come from work, he used to get off his horse, you know, and all the kids would wait for him by the door, you know, with our hands on the back. And the respect that we had, he used to shake our hands. My father never kissed us, and he never sat us on his lap. He just say, look at each one of us in the eye, and he says, son, Don Juan, how are you? How was your day? Let's go and talk. Anyway, he used to sit on his rocking chair, and my sister would bring some lukewarm water, bring a soap, and one of us would wash his feet, you know, take off his boots. He had boots on, and we you wash his feet, and then one of my sister would massage his feet. Then the other one would cut his toenails, and then the other one give him a massage on his feet. And, you know, that's being rich when your kids love you like that. So, you know, I got that from him. And, you know, sometimes kids with a big belly used to go by the house, and my dad would be eating, and he would call the kid in and give him his food. And I said, well, Dad, what are you gonna do? You know, you come from work, you don't eat. He said, son, I'll be okay. Then he would go back on the little farm that we have. We had the tomatoes and potatoes and lemons and grapefruits and all kinds of fruits and all kinds of vegetables. And he would go back there. We had a vine called Verdolaga. He used to eat that right out of the ground. He just pick it up and eat it. And eat the lettuce and eat all that stuff just raw like that. What was so interesting about him is that later on, when we got old, I told him that, you know, I'm sick of my stomach. That I have dysentery, you know. And he said, "What is that?" He never had dysentery in his life. And I tell you, the greatest experience that I had with him is that when I was a kid, and this was the second job he had because the other guy had fired him. There was a hurricane coming to Puerto Rico, and he had to go get the cattle. And I mean, it was big time cattle. I mean, this was a cattle ranch, and he took his three dogs with him, and he brought the cows in. And you know, he left like at 4:30 in the morning, maybe 4 o'clock, to get that cattle back. And when he got back, the owner of the farm asked him. He said, "Don Juan, how many did you find?" And my dad says, "I found everyone but one. But I'm going to get up very early in the morning." Now this is about 7 o'clock. It's dark. Okay. He says, "Well, go back and find it now." And my father got off the horse, and he took the bridles. He says, "Stick this bridle where the sun don't shine, and you go get it." He says, "I'm done. I'm leaving here. I'm leaving tomorrow." So, you know, when I became an adult, I asked him. He says, "Dad, let's talk. Why did you do what?" He says, "Son, all you kids were there when this man did that to me, and I wanted to show you not to ever let any man intimidate you. You stand your ground with him. No matter what the results are, you stand your ground as a man and don't let anybody do what he did to me."
Chichi Rodriguez won 38 holes in ones in his life, and three times he made two holes in one in the same round. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Chichi, speaking of being rich, you've said that the greatest moment in your amazing life was when you met the richest person you ever met, and that was Mother Teresa. Talk to us about that experience.
Well, you know what happened is I was in the Philippines, and President Marcos and I were pretty good friends, and Imelda, you know, and he was the best friend the United States will ever have. Any leader that I met, he was it. I'm sitting down with him at a place called Puerto Azul, and we're talking. And he says, "You know, the Pope is going to be in town in Manila, and so is Mother Teresa. Which one would you like to meet?" I said, "Mr. President, we'll always have another Pope. We may never have another Mother Teresa, so I want to meet her. She's my idol." So they arranged the thing so when she was at the airport, that I would be at the airport with my wife. And I prayed that night, and I said, "Dear God, if she's an angel, I want you to show me." So my wife and I go to the first class lounge, and there she is. She had about five more nuns with her. And when I shook her hand, every hair in my body stood up. Like, I mean, it was the most incredible thing that's ever happened to me, you know, like an electrical shock hit me, but a fun electrical shock, you know. And the first thing that she told me, she says, "You know, you're rich. How come you don't share with the poor?" And I had a check in my left hand, and I handed it to her, and I said, "Mother Teresa, how do you know I don't share with the poor?" And she started looking at that check, and she kept looking and looking and looking. And I said, "Well, I have to break the ice." And I said, "Mother Teresa," she knew she had sinned, you see, because she judged me without knowing me. And I said, "How do you know that I don't share with the poor? You know, let's sit down and talk. And don't worry, we all commit sins, and God forgives us." And then we started talking. She sat down. I said, "Let's sit down and." And she didn't, I don't even know if she knew who I was. because sometimes I don't even know who I am. So sometimes I think I'm Tom Cruise. So then I look in the mirror and I'm not. But anyway, all she talked about was compassion, you know, and her goal to do a leper's colony in India. And she said, what I do is I go to a baseball park and I give speeches there, and I had everybody for entrance has to bring a can of food, and then I send it to the poorest people in the world. But you know, she was the most powerful person in the world. And Mother Teresa materially was very poor, but spiritually she was very rich. She was probably the richest person that ever lived in the world. And those been the best 45 minutes of my life to be with her.
One of the many things I've learned from doing this show for 8 years is how many times people say, I've learned much more from the poor than I ever did from the rich. Why is that, Cheech?
Well, the rich people always want more and more and more. You see what's happening right now. Those billionaires, they just want more money and more money. They could care less about America or anybody. They need to know. You know, I'm an American. You know, I was born in Puerto Rico. I'm a Puerto Rican. But I tell you what, if the United States needs everything that I have made in my life to save the country, I would give it back. And when you're born poor, you know what the bottom is like. When you're born rich, you don't know how the bottom is like. So you're always afraid of losing what you have, because if you do and you go to the bottom, you won't know how to sleep on the ground. You won't know how to fight a dog for the bone on the pork chop. You won't know what the black coffee, only black coffee, is for breakfast. You don't know that there's no lunch. You don't know that at night maybe you get lucky and get a pork chop with a little rice and beans and stuff like that. They don't know that. They don't know that that the kids will sit around and eat the meal at night and eat very fast because the last one to finish had to do the dishes. I mean, they don't know stuff like that. They have never had a challenge. So, you know, you're very rich when you can share with somebody knowing you can't get nothing in return. And the poor people, they share without expecting anything. The rich, they always want something.
You say, Chi-Chi, that you're 5 over par. You're 77. You look great. How do you stay so young and so young at heart?
Stay positive. You got to stay positive and work out. I work out maybe 2-3 times a week. I go to the gym. I've been going to the gym since 19. I started going in 1959. I started going to the gym, but I never, hurts don't tell Avis. So I never told anybody why I hit the ball so far when I was young, and that was it. I work in the gym maybe 3-4 times every week, and at night, and. My parents, my grandfather on my father's side and my grandmother, they died at 114 years each. And on my mother's side, both died over 100. So I'm trying to break that cycle and live to be 200. If a jealous husband don't kill me when I'm 120, I'm gonna live to be 200.
In 1994, you served as the Grand Marshal for the 1994 Tournament of Roses Parade. I mean, that's tall cotton. What?
Yeah.
What did you think about that experience?
Hey, but, you know, those are material things. The spiritual things is what turns me on. My goal in life is to have kids make it. You know, I mean, I'd rather one of my kids that could come out of my foundation gets that. But I loved it. It was great for my ego. But, you know, what's with me is to help orphan kids. We help them out in Mexico. We got over 4,000 kids that we have helped out over there. I have helped out with the FBI. Now when an FBI agent got shot in action, you know, they used to give them $25,000, the federal government. That's it. So if they had kids to go to college, they couldn't afford it. So we created a thing called the Jimmy Fund. And when I went with them, they had like $400,000, because when the families tried to borrow money, they couldn't pay back. So we started doing an endowment, and now we got, I heard it, so we have 107 young people of the deceased FBI agents that are going to college free. And you know, that's the kind of thing that I want to do. I mean, we got over $7 million in that fund right now, endowment, you know, and that's the kind of thing that makes me happy.
Chi-Chi, as our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
The young listeners that, you know, my dad used to say, son, if you stick with pigs, you're going to smell bad. Tell me whom you walk with, and I'll tell you whom you are. There's nothing wrong with being a loner. There's nothing wrong with a young man, instead of idolizing young people, to idolize an old person. See, I used to have idols like Mr. Roberts at Augusta, Mr. Ed Dudley, my mentor, Mahatma Gandhi. We had a governor here who was the first politician that gave what he promised. A guy named was George Marine, who gave us a piece of land. I idolized him. I idolized Nat King Cole. I mean, Frank Sinatra. I had good idols. And now the kids, the problem they have is that they have other kids that they idolize. There's nothing wrong with idolizing your teacher, you know. That's what the advice is. If they want to be good at something, they have to work hard. You know, you want to be a good golfer? Go and practice and practice and practice until your hands bleed. And then you can become good. And when they call you lucky, that's when you're going to know you're good.
Chi-Chi Rodriguez, at the start of the show, you said you're small in stature, but you're big in the heart. Well, Cheech, you might be small in stature, but you're huge in the heart, and you're an international treasure. Thanks for all you do. Stay young, and keep doing what you do.
And tell the people in Detroit that don't worry. This economy is going to come back, and Detroit is going to come back like it was, the best city in the world.
God bless.
God bless. Bye.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great day, because with God, anything is possible. Spohum.